Welcome to Elevate, where we explore the intersection of leadership, culture, and well-being. Join us as we embark on a journey to empower both individuals and organizations to reach new heights of success and fulfillment. I'm your host, Annette Dowdle, and together, let's elevate the way we work and live. Welcome, our guest, Tim Duncan. He is the Vice President of Athletics and Recreation for University of New Orleans.
Hey, Annette.
Hey.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm glad that you came.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about us? I mean, we already talked about your resume.
Right.
It's 8 pages long.
It's pretty long.
It's a lot.
That just means I'm old. That's all it means.
But what are you the most proud of? Because, I mean, I looked at a lot of things on your resume.
Yeah.
With, you know, the academic part, you know, what you did for student athletes and getting them at a 3.0 grade point average for 8 semesters out of 9.
Yeah.
And then having the Breakfast of Champions. I mean,
yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, you did a lot of great stuff, but that's pretty amazing as well.
It is. At the end of the day, we're still educators. And I get a chance to watch, you know, sports and student athletes compete all the time, but we're still educators. We want them to be successful students while they're there and take something away and go make us proud. So we wanted to create an event that applauded them for their academic pursuits as much as they get applauded when they play. So we created the Breakfast of Champions, and we invite all of the president and her cabinet and many of the advisors and deans and, you know, all the rest of the student athletes and all of our staff, just to make sure they know how much we appreciate them. We give them plaques with their name on it, with their GPA, of course, and then we take pictures of them as a team, and we obviously publish that on our social and on our website. So again, it's something that they can be proud of, a plaque that they can take home and give to mom to show that they've done good things. Those are always always fun. So yeah, that's something that I'm extremely proud of, to ensure that our student athletes are being very successful academically.
So what else would you like people to know about your career? Because you have had a
long career, which I can relate to. Yeah, for sure. It's the thing that I'm most proud of is probably the versatility in our career. After graduate school, I got an internship with the Russell Athletic. It used to be big back in the day, in the 90s, I think. And then I worked on NASCAR for the Winston brand. So I worked when it was NASCAR Winston Cup. So I worked in 2 Fortune 500 companies at the time, and then transitioned to be an entrepreneur, owned an event marketing company, and then went to the University of Memphis and asked them, hey, can you send some donors to support our business? And they ended up offering me a job in fundraising there, and that's how I started in college athletics. And my two previous careers from the corporate world and owning a business helps me every day, because part of my job is revenue generation. So I get a chance to talk to people in corporations about how advertising or marketing with the University of New Orleans makes sense. And I also get a chance to have those conversations with small business owners. And I was a small business owner. So I think I'm able to speak the language and identify with them as to how to articulate their needs. And transitioning into college athletics, I think, again, those two careers serve me every day. And it makes me a little bit more well-rounded than someone who's worked strictly in education or higher education since they got out of college. So I think it's an advantage for me to be able to have that kind of versatility in my background.
Yeah, you do a lot of fundraising. You do a lot of community work to help the athletes.
Yeah.
You're overseeing the leadership, the administrative leadership in your area. And you're also having to oversee teams, sports teams.
Yeah.
And you also are teaching an MBA leadership class.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I've always been intrigued by leadership. You see it a lot in sports, and I wanted to understand it a little bit more formally. So I've just done a lot of just studying on my own, read a lot of John Maxwell and several other authors who publish leadership books. And so Steve Stroud on my team and I went to the dean of the business school and asked her, could we start a concentration in athletics or sports. Mm-hmm. And so when she created the sports leadership and management class, I thought that was perfect. That's what the one I wanted to do. Steve is doing a revenue generation class, and then another gentleman is doing a sports marketing class. So we wanted to be able to have the world of sports business is growing rapidly every day. And here in our city with multiple college teams, multiple professional teams, the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation, of which I'm a member, I'm a board member, that we're bringing the Super Bowl to town. There are many opportunities for people to grow. So to kind of formalize that through an MBA, which I think is the most valuable, graduate degree, it's fun. It's fun, and it provides the students with a perspective that we are able to provide them by working in the field as well as teaching it. So yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, as a leader and teaching your leadership class, what do you think are the most important characteristics and behaviors that a leader should exhibit to make sure that they are helping a culture with positivity and setting goals and meeting expectations? How do you go? What have you learned from that?
Yeah, I think first of all, a leader has to be authentic. They have to be him or herself.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't just emulate someone else and hope that style works for you. It has to be ingrained in you, and you have to incorporate your principles into your typical personality. And I think communication, I know it's something we're going to talk about, is very key. I think you have to put terms in a way the audience can receive it. So, it sounds simple, but I generally think that, okay, how is this person? How should I phrase this so this person can understand it and get the best out of it? And sometimes you have to be very direct, and sometimes you have to be a little bit more, ask questions to have them kind of get it themselves. It depends on the person and the situation. So it is awesome to try to understand how people learn as well. Some people learn auditory, some people learn through seeing it written on a board, and some people learn kinesthetically, so they have to do stuff to learn.
Right.
And so understanding that, and we talk about that, understanding how people learn, it allows, I think, us the best opportunity to reach them. So when in classes and in like our leadership meetings, we'll do part where I'm talking about stuff, I'm writing stuff on the board, and we're getting in small groups to have them work together. So each learning style is accomplished, and everyone can get something from whatever the topic is. Yeah, I think that's an important trait that I know that we are very intentional about at the University of New Orleans.
Right. I think when you said being authentic, I think it resonates with me as well, because it's hard to look up to a leader when you don't feel like they're like a real person, and that they're being sincere with you, and you don't have that respect and trust. And if you don't have that first part, it's hard to have a relationship and look to them and want to follow them. With that being said, do you find that there has been something that in your past has triggered you down this route? You know, you've got such a colorful background going from corporate to, small business owner to leader at UNO and athletic director and professor.
Yeah.
Would you ever thought you'd been called a professor?
Not at all. I mean, I didn't have the best grades ever, so I never would have thought that. But it's funny. So my dad, when I was a kid, he said, "Tim, you're a leader." And that scared me, because that sounded like a lot of pressure. And I was like, "Wait, man, what are you talking about, Dad?" He said, "Man, all the friends always come over your house to play. You're the one always organizing the games." And I didn't realize that. And so I went through a period that I didn't always use my leadership skills for good, particularly in college. I'd be the ringleader and say, "Yeah, let's go to this party. Let's sneak out after curfew. No one will ever know."
Yeah.
And so when I started to learn how to use my leadership skills for good, then I was able. Leadership, I think, is about influence. And that's what John Maxwell says. So to be able to influence people to reach their best, I think, is something that is very, very important. And so at an early age, my dad told me I was very influential. He didn't say it in those words. And again, it was a little bit scary. But when I look back, I mean, they did come to my house and I did organize the games. I don't know if I've always been bossy or not, but we'll just say it's leadership, right? So, he recognized that in me early and I didn't even know it. So I appreciate him for putting that on my radar as, an 8 or 9 year old.
Right.
Yeah.
Did they also tell you that, you know, you were going to be successful no matter what?
They did. They did. They always believed in me. You can do whatever you want to and put your mind to. And my dad, especially, even that I've gotten grown, he said, man, I should have put your goals higher because you achieved all of them and you could have stretched more. And I'm like, dude, I'm good. You know, and he did all that he could do. And he and my mom weren't college graduates. They attended college, but so they taught me all they could, but they instilled, the work ethic and the confidence that my brother and I can do whatever we wanted to do. And we were, naive enough to believe them.
Right. Yeah. I know. I was talking with a friend of mine, Savannah, and we were talking about how our fathers molded us into the people that we are today.
Right, for sure.
And they were our role models, our best friends.
Right.
And the little tips of advice that they'd give you. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really even advice. It was those comments pointing out things that wasn't so obvious to us at the time.
That's awesome.
And especially we didn't have a ton of confidence. Mm-hmm. But later in life, now we're here and we see what our parents have given us.
Yeah.
Especially my father, you know.
Yeah, I think the dad and daughter relationship is so special. I can't remember her name, but the founder of Spanx. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, yes.
So I read a quote by her that said, at the dinner table, her father used to ask her, okay, what have you failed at this week? And she thought that was awesome, and it challenged her. And he said, well, if you haven't failed anything, you haven't really taken any risks. So I do that with my daughter. I talk about, babe, take risks. Because a lot of time we teach our daughters to have a high floor and not necessarily a high ceiling. So if they're going to fail, they're going to fail being this. But we teach our sons, go for it. So I've been very intentional with my youngest daughter, Tatum, to talk to her about just trying stuff, whether it's on the soccer field where she plays, or in school. For example, she's a junior at Ben Franklin High School, and really, really great high school in New Orleans. And so she is not great in English. She makes A's, all A's, but she's not adept at writing papers. So AP English, as a senior next year, she didn't want to sign up for it. She talked to her teacher, and her teacher said, no, you shouldn't do this. You should take the regular English. And I'm like, hell no, you're going to take AP English because if you're not good at writing, you're going to do a whole bunch of writing in college. I would rather you struggle in high school and get it right, so in college it's a lot easier. And so she is afraid. She says, Dad, it'll mess my grades up. I said, no, it won't. You'll be fine. So that's just, I try to instill the confidence in her. You have to try it. Just because you're not good at it doesn't mean you can't get better at it. And you just use the same work ethic you use in everything other aspect of your life, and it'll work out. I know it will, because she's super smart. She just needs a little bit more oomph. And at that point, I wanted to give her off. Now, my son, Turner, I don't need to give him any off. He thinks he can do everything without doing anything. That's just kind of how boys are. He's a smart kid, too, but not as doesn't work as hard as his sister. So things come a little naturally, and he has a little charisma. So he thinks that can help him, and it does. But so I have to challenge him in a different way and kind of say, hey, man, I need you to do this, and kind of, I won't say tear him down because that's too strong, but kind of talk a little bit more challenging to him and aggressive to him. Say, hey, man, you're not doing a damn thing in this class. Can you do better? And challenge him that way.
Right.
And he responds that way. Whereas Tatum, I got to give her a little boost. With Turner, I have to, talk a little trash because he's a basketball guy. So it helps.
So it goes to our kids. Are our kids, is that where we start our training on our leadership skills?
Yeah, I think so. I think we start even as friends, as kids, when we, with our friends, in Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts or youth soccer, I'm a big proponent of all kids playing some sports because you're going to learn some things. It's not about playing in high school or college. It's about learning those skills, how to interact with people. Getting in a huddle to talk about challenges, and a lot of times in sports, the analogies are right there for the learning and for the taking. So if you learn them at that age and just apply them, then you realize. And we do an event called Empower Her, which is an event that we support our women student athletes. And there's a stat, I think it's 80% of the women CEOs played sports at some point in their career, because it just allows those lessons to become easy analogies to be able to take away and learn and apply again and again. So I'm a big proponent of athletics at whatever age, so people can, learn the interpersonal dynamics and working within a team.
Right. So, well, yeah. I've actually been to that event.
Yeah, you have.
And that is a great event to attend.
Yeah, it is.
Y'all do a really good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's an important event. It supports our women student athletes and provide them with mentors, additional scholarship dollars, and then educational opportunities. When those teams travel, they'll go to the Civil Rights Museum, or they'll go to, you know, some place where they can learn. If you're going to go to D.C. or Chicago or wherever, there's something there about their culture or history that can benefit them. So those are important lessons for our women student athletes. They're men as well, but we do this specifically for those women.
So you're a pretty positive person. I mean, yeah. every time I see you, you're always smiling, you're always happy. Is that what you use in your classroom and at home and in your leadership meetings? Yeah. Are you that positive person all the time? Or
yeah, I mean, there are some times when I'm not always positive, but I think the best and the worst things about me are I don't stay mad very long about anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes it's great. Sometimes I need to be mad a little bit longer, though. So, I'm positive most of the time. I think my outlook is positive, but there are times that, you know, you have to kind of reflect, and I try to get through those times, as quickly as possible so I can get back to, you know, being the person I am. And I try to be intentional about not letting things weigh on my mind very, very long, process it, and move on. So that's, again, that's like in sports. You miss a shot, you got to go back and play defense. Or if you drop a pass in football, you got to be ready to catch the next one. So that next play mentality, I think, again, learning from sports has helped me kind of get through some of those kind of tougher times.
Right. So I was reading, and I'm going to move on to culture because I think positivity and culture, I mean, it's all in leadership. It's all intermixed.
For sure.
So I was reading an article from John Gordon that just came out like last week. Do you subscribe to him?
I don't. I do. I've read multiple of his books, but I'm not following him right now.
Okay. I'm going to send you.
Okay. Please do.
Yeah, so you can see it. But it's great. It talks about positivity and how those are the best leaders.
Yeah.
And they're the most successful people. They have the best mental health. And people want to follow a positive person.
Yeah.
And negative and being pessimistic is not typically what you see out of super successful people.
For sure.
But you know, it rang to me because it's like, you know, it's not always, you know, pom-poms and butterflies and unicorns and, you know, being positive. There is some good value in being a positive person, which also builds to... and I'm added in here, resilience, when you get into those really tough times. So let's talk about culture and how you see it. I mean, some people, like I'm lucky to have some really great bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them told me a long time ago, her name is Shelley. She said, what I want to do here at Hub is I want to build an intentional culture.
You're right.
This was, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really know what that meant. I mean, I do now.
Right.
But how do y'all build? Do y'all build an intentional culture, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, well, culture is going to happen regardless. It's the definition I like of culture is everything that's happened since the day you entered into the organization until the present time. So if you're not being intentional, there is a culture, and it may not be the right one. So the things I like to emphasize are based on my core values. Mm-hmm. So my core values are teamwork, accessibility, discernment, and service. So teamwork is easy. I try to make decisions based on, you know, a collaborative effort, then I'll own the decision, but I want to make sure I hear from that. Being accessible, you know, it's just, you know, having my door open for, you know, student athletes, for coaches, staff, whomever. Discernment is judgment. And again, my judgment is based on the information I get from my team, and then service to give back. So we created a list of qualities of what we look for in our team members. And then we try to celebrate. We celebrate birthdays on a monthly basis. We have a party planning committee. So if there's a death in a family, a wedding, a birthday, that committee recognizes the, you know, the team member or staff member that is going through that on a positive or a negative side. So we look for, you know, people who are resilient, people who work hard, who try to have a solution-oriented earlier in my career, I used to try to answer all the questions for all of my, you know, team members. And then I one day just flipped the switch and said, well, what's your recommendation? And people know now on my team that if you're going to bring a problem, don't just sit in on my desk. You have to at least have thought about a solution before you come. And that might not be the right solution, but at least you've taken the time to work through it. And so I have a couple of people that I'll be like, so what's your recommendation? Or they'll be like, do you want to do this? I don't know. I don't want to do this. Okay. And then they'll change their language. Well, Tim, I would like for you to do this. That's a much better conversation. So being solution oriented is an intentional part of the culture that I will stop someone in a minute and say, well, what is your recommendation? And that's the expectation, to bring solutions to the table. Again, it doesn't have to be the right one, but I want you to think about what the solution is as you're thinking about it, a problem. I had a boss tell me one time, Tim, there's three kind of people. There are people who never recognize a problem. There are people who recognize a problem and don't do anything about it. And there are people like you who recognize a problem and develop a solution. So that's something that stuck with me. It was, you know, quite a compliment, I think. And so I look for
it's
that.
A big
in people.
Compliment.
Yeah, thank you. I think so too. And so it's something I look for in other people now. And if they don't have it, I'm going to ask them, you know, what is your recommendation or what is the solution?
So it sounds like you have a very thoughtful plan too about about how you interview people mm-hmm. when you're bringing someone on board and yeah. you're looking for certain things and
right.
making sure that they fit your culture.
Right.
Am I hearing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we like...
Because you just hired a whole bunch of
right.
coaches.
Right,
and,
for
yeah,
sure.
coaches, yeah.
Athletics is always fluctuating because, you know, especially at our level, the University of New Orleans, there are jobs that, you know, pay more, provide more exposure. So we're always kind of in that, you know, hiring mode, and that's okay. So we look at people and do scenario based, and I want to know what they think, what their philosophy is, even if they haven't done a specific task. What do you think about that? How do you think you'll handle something like that? And those are the things I think that's more important than traditional, you know, standard interview questions. I want to know how they think, and then we can utilize, and that shows an insight into their, you know, outlook. Mm-hmm. And in their positive mental attitude. And those are the things that we look for the most.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Tim, all of us have had some kind of situation in our past
yeah.
that kind of like taken us down this leadership or career path. It was a pivotal moment. It could have been bullying or something really,
right.
you know, really negative.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has a story, and it's helped refine them.
Yeah.
Do you have
To help refine story? Me, I don't know. I have a story. I have a lot of them. But the story that pops to mind as you ask that is that I was an AD at a previous institution, and there was a situation where a student athlete had got kicked out of a soccer game. She played soccer. And so the coach told me that, the commissioner made a mistake and said she just has to sit out two games. She has to sit out two games. But the rule says she had, and he gave me the wrong rule. I knew the commissioner, we were personal friends. He gave me the wrong rules. I told the coach, and the coach said, are you sure? I said, yeah, the commissioner told me. He never told me what the real rules that the student athlete had to sit out five games. So the student athlete, he put her in a game at game three, and she played three games. And then we won the championship. But before they announced it, someone complained that we played an illegal player. So we had to forfeit those games, and we didn't win the championship.
Ugh.
So that was very hurtful. And so I owned it. Because I'm the leader of the department. So I went and had to face those young ladies and say, yeah, I apologize for, you know, listening to commissioner, all that. And my president was like, your coach knew what he knew it and should have done. He said, I see, I trusted him to know the rules. He said, Tim, yes, you will trust, but verify. And that's not, and then he also said this, he was very wise, very wise man. He also said, Tim, I said, well, I'm worried about micromanaging. He said, Tim, you can't micromanage if they don't manage in the first place. So I think about that all the time, about how I oversee areas. My job is to make sure the finished product looks a certain way. So I have to ask enough questions to make sure that they are managing the situation appropriately, and that's not micromanagement until they develop the trust that they are managing appropriately. And then my job is still to ask them questions, right. You know? So I think good employees don't necessarily feel micromanaged if you ask questions in the right way. I think team members who struggle in that space usually leave a little something that is to be desired. And it's up to me to help them figure out how to get there. So that story helped me understand trust but verify, but also micromanagement. Excuse me. Micromanagement can't happen without them being a manager in the first place.
Right.
So yeah, that was very influential in my career.
Yes. Yes. I think we've all had some kind of story that like redefined us, yeah. or was a moment that we realized, okay, I need to do things a little bit differently.
For sure.
And as long as you learn from
it. Tell me your story.
Oh, well, there's a few.
Yeah.
But the one that sticks out the most, it was more about a choice to leave Alabama and mm-hmm. move to Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I was told that I wasn't going to be successful.
Oh, wow.
Coming to Louisiana because yeah. I knew nobody.
Right, right.
I was 25 years old.
Yeah.
And I was moving into a totally different, well, I was in the insurance industry, mm-hmm. but totally different kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved when the Department of Insurance had receivership.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Cross Blue Shield. I went to work for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. They went into receivership. And so that means that the people, the staff, that's what they thought, is that you're not supposed to be selling anything.
Right.
And I didn't know any better because I was 25.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to like prove myself because people had told me like, oh, you can't be successful.
Right.
You need your family. You don't know anybody, your insurance. And so you're not from there and you know how it is from Louisiana.
Yeah. Absolutely.
like you know, I couldn't say where I went to high school.
Right.
So I did not know any better. And I sat in a conference room. I didn't even have an office. And I went through the yellow pages, just calling up people.
Yeah.
And I started selling stuff. And the rest of the team, the sales team, was mad at me. And they go, don't you know that we're in receivership?
Right.
You're not supposed to be selling anything. And so I did. But it took a little while to win them over. But
yeah.
They realized I was just young and I didn't know any better. But I was young and I didn't know any better. So
right.
There was nothing to stop me from doing what I thought I needed to do.
Right. Now, wasn't it empowering for you to come here on your own and just figure it out and make a life?
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Again,
I love that.
Yeah, didn't even, you know, I didn't know any better. I was just, you know, I felt very positive about the move. I felt really good
right.
about my confidence in being able to be successful on my own. And I did have a little bit of, like, I've got to prove that I
right.
can do this on my own.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of toughness, like a shell on
right.
you that you didn't know what was there because you hadn't had to have that or show that level of toughness. And for you to come here and start all over as a woman, which is a little bit more difficult from what I understand than being a guy, but coming to a new space in a city that is, as you mentioned, you got to know what high school you went to is a big question that tells you everything along the socioeconomic scale and race and everything. So to be able to overcome that as a young person is very impressive. So I'm not surprised that that's a story that you wanted to share.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So I appreciate you coming
yeah.
here today. Why don't we end it with you telling us what you want, you know, people to know about you.
Yeah.
What would you want your legacy to be?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I want people to know me for giving to people. Mm-hmm. I like to develop people, and I think that's what I'd prefer to be known as, whether it's student-athletes, helping them find their way in this, you know, world. I think I do a great job of reaching student-athletes that don't have it figured out, because I didn't. When I graduated college the day after it, I was like, oh, shit. What am I supposed to do now?
Mm-hmm.
And I figured it out. So I think I like to be known as to help people. I love to be known as developing my staff, professional development. I've had people leave to, you know, multiple people have left and gone on to be athletic directors or deputy at Syracuse, deputy at San Jose State, a couple of ADs since they've left here. And that makes me proud that they got something here and was able to take it and elevate their lives and their personal situations. So that is something that, you know, I'm personally invested in helping to grow people. So if anything I want to be remembered at is that, to help people grow.
That's great.
What about you? Tell me, what's your superpower?
Well, resilience.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the last couple of years have been really tough.
Yeah,
and knowing that I could, you know, well, moving from Alabama to Louisiana, despite, you know, what I was told from the people I left to the people I came to get to know at work, they did not want to see me succeed.
For sure.
And so I just did it on my own.
Yeah.
And I felt like resilience and determination is probably what I want to help other people with.
Right.
And being authentic and not having to be something that you're not.
Yeah.
Is, I hope that people think that about me.
Right.
But I just want to make the world a better place.
Yeah, for sure.
And that I've touched people's lives and somehow either made them laugh or just gave them a nugget of wisdom somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I think a part of that too is being vulnerable. I think people resonate when you show a little bit of yourself. So I try to do that with our student athletes and coaches. I tell them, I didn't know what I wanted to do when I graduated. I didn't always make great choices. I was the ringleader of, you know, of missing curfew, and I use that so they know that I understand what they're going through. And so I think that helps people. It just comes natural to kind of show that level of vulnerability. And I think that you have that same thing, because we've had conversations outside of this where it resonates with people when you show a little bit of yourself. And I think we have to be secure in ourselves to show that, but also use it strategically, because you can't show everything to everybody, because some people will use it against you. So, I like your vulnerability, and I think that goes very well with your resilience and your toughness. And I'm happy to kind of spend this time with you and learn from you as well. It's been fun.
This has been fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate you coming.
Thank you for having me. I love to come again.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Well, we know that it's going to be.
Yes, the next format is going to be very exciting. I can't wait for that, right?
Well, thank you, everyone. We appreciate you joining us this evening. And thank you, Tim.
Thank you
for coming.
This has been awesome. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Until next time, my friends, remember, as we continue to strive for excellence in both our professional and personal lives, let's always aim to elevate ourselves and those around us. Thank you for joining us on this journey of growth and empowerment, and keep reaching for new heights.